You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free. And things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me as always, lovable and humble shoeshine boy, Tim Dennis. Good evening, Tim.
Hey there.
How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good. This evening, Tim, we've got some exciting news going on. For those of you that tuned in last week and heard the awesome interview that we had with Mr. Peter James talking about all the ghosts of the Queen Mary, tickets have begun to fly very fast for the Queen Mary trip that we have coming up. For those of you that may not be familiar with it, shame on you. We have a paranormal trip that's coming up in January, January 14th, 15th, 16th. We're all going back on the 17th. It is to the Queen Mary out in Long Beach, California. And we're going to be going along with two of the members from the TV show Ghost Hunters. We're going to be going with Lisa Dualibi and Donna LaCroix. We're also going to go with Chris Fleming from the TV show Dead Famous and Patrick Burns, the paranormal investigator from the TV show on Court TV called Haunting Evidence. We're also going to be joined by Peter James there, and he claims that during the investigations, when he makes an appearance, you should be able to hear the actual spirits speak out loud. We won't need EVP equipment, so it's going to be pretty interesting. We're in negotiations right now to have him be a part of the actual investigations with us at some point. So keep tuned. Check out the site, darknessradio.com. Click on the trips button and join us for that trip. Tickets are moving fast. We get a chance to actually stay on the Queen Mary. We're going to have a beautiful dinner on the Queen Mary one of the nights. Get a chance to mix and mingle with quite a few other paranormal fans. It's going to be a great opportunity to be out there and have a lot of fun. Look forward to seeing you there and hope to have you join us. Right now, we'd like to welcome our guests for this evening. This evening, we've got Denise Jones and John Zaffis that are joining us. They're going to discuss some of the cases that they've been involved with the paranormal. Denise has a history of psychic phenomena in her family, and it's been passed down from generation to generation. As a matter of fact, her son was the inspiration for the character of Cole Sear in the movie The Sixth Sense. Her son actually sees dead people. Now, Denise is going to be sharing her amazing stories with us, and together with world-renowned paranormal investigator and demonologist John Zaffis, we're going to discuss some of the most amazing stories you've heard from the different investigations and Denise's own history. Denise is also the founder of the Life Foundation, and you can see that and get help there by going to paranormalhelp.com. She's also the author of the book The Other Side, and she's currently working on the sequel Voices from the Other Side with a friend and colleague from Ghost Magazine, Jason McCurry. There's a link on our site so that you can actually go visit Denise's website or you can order her book. As I mentioned, we also have with us this evening Mr. John Zaffis, and John has over 30 years of experience studying and investigating the paranormal. He's had the opportunity to work for and with his aunt and uncle, Ed and Lorraine Warren. This sent John beyond looking for ghosts and hauntings into studying demonology under the Warrens. And John's involvement in cases are legendary. He's been all over the United States checking out all types of different hauntings. Great guy. We've had him on the show before. We're going to have him on again in a couple of weeks to talk about lycanthropy and some werewolf stories. But right now we're going to bring on the phone Denise Jones and John Zaffis. Good evening and welcome.
Hi, Dave. How you doing?
Hi, doing Dave. Great. I'm so thankful both of you are able to make it here with us this evening and appreciate the time that you spend. Now, Denise, let's start off with you a little bit. John, we're going to put you on the back burner for just a short time while we kind of catch up on Denise's history here. And
okay.
Then we'll bring you in as well. Now, Denise, give us a little background. Now, you said, as I mentioned in the beginning, you've kind of got a psychic link throughout your family that's passed down generation to generation. Tell us a little bit about that and a little bit about what's happened in you and your family.
Yeah, the generation, my mother's great-great-grandfather was a medicine man, and he was very gifted. And it seemed to be both my parents are gifted. They can see spirits, and my mother, she knows when things are going to happen before they happen. Growing up, I was very afraid of spirits because we've had them in the home. Sometimes we would see them going up the stairs or something.
So you can see them as well physically? Or just
sometimes.
Some spirits? Okay.
I don't see them every day, all the time. But, yeah, I've seen them.
All right.
But as a child, I was so afraid of them, I kind of blocked it out, you know.
Sure.
I was just very scared. I would leave the doors open so I could run out of the house.
I
was more afraid what was in the house than outside, but I think it was just preparing me for what was going to happen when I had children.
Okay.
I do. And
all
then
right.
I had my children, and my youngest son kind of got hit really hard with the gifts. I wasn't sure if he did have the gifts. I was hoping that there was something medically wrong with him, and I kind of kept taking him to doctors and praying that something was wrong with him so that he could take a pill and then fix it, but that didn't happen.
Okay. So you thought maybe it was a psychological disorder or just a epileptic type of order or what?
Yeah, I don't want to say I kind of hoped he had it.
I understand what you mean.
It was just,
as a parent, you didn't want to believe that it was your kid was seeing ghosts.
Well, I was still afraid of him at the
time
as well. Then Michael would start asking me, who's upstairs? Why are they talking up there? And I would kind of shoo him out of the house, be like, you know, no, it's nobody, Michael. There's no one here.
Now, this is your younger son, correct?
This is my youngest son. He was about 4 years old when he first started saying things.
Like, now, how about your older son? Was he having these abilities or any form of them as well?
Well, do you know, he never would say. He never, you know, he was very frightened, but he never would say that he could see them. Now, yes, you know, he does have the gifts as well. But he never shared them throughout the time that we were going through it with Michael.
Okay.
I don't know why, but he just didn't share it. But Michael started screaming one day in his room, and I ran upstairs, and he kept screaming that a man kept trying to touch him. So, of course, as a mother, you don't think, you know, it's a ghost. I mean,
right.
I was running around the house. I picked up a truck. I'm running around seeing if somebody's in my house. You know, I'm going to hit him with a truck. But there was no man, and I told Michael, you know, it's okay, you know, play, and I went downstairs again, and he started screaming again, and I ran upstairs, and he was like in a fetal position at this time, really shaking. So I kind of took him downstairs, and I didn't know what to do, so I said, well, let's go over Grandma's house, you know, let's all go to McDonald's and go to Grandma's house, and this is what we did. And my father, who epoxies pictures.
Now, as a paranormal person, is McDonald's a good place to go to get away from ghosts?
It is for children, because it makes them happy, you
see.
You know, they were excited.
Oh, damn. See, I thought I had a fight here for Big Mac sauce being like the elixir of heaven or something.
For kids, I think.
Yeah.
But my father epoxies pictures. Well, he happened to have a picture of his father that he epoxied and put it up on the wall. Now, my kids have never seen any pictures of him. My grandfather was passed away when I was 10 years old. We go into their house, and the kids, of course, run to the candy dish, and Michael sees the picture and just starts screaming that this is the guy who was trying to touch him, which was my grandfather.
Okay.
And it just all started from
now,
there.
Trying to touch him, you mean he was trying to grab his arm, his hand,
touch
hit
his
him?
Shoulder.
Okay.
He
all
said
right.
He kept trying to touch his shoulder, and this is something my grandfather used to do to everybody. If he was standing next to you, he put his hand on your shoulder.
Okay.
And it just started from there.
All right.
That was Michael's, you know, the first spirit that I knew Michael had seen.
All right. And was he, now is he seeing them? You know, I know that we said that this, he was basically the inspiration for the character played by Haley Joel Osment in the movie The Sixth Sense.
Oh, now, it goes further.
Right. But Haley Joel could actually see them in the movie. Of course, I'm guessing for dramatic effect, he saw them as they appeared at the time of their death.
Michael does too.
Okay, so he'll see the eyes hanging out or the...
The blood coming down, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
that's
got
to be brutal. Oh,
it is, because, you know, for a child, you can't... It's hard to... he doesn't know whether they're good or bad at that time.
Right.
You know, and we kept telling him that it was my grandfather, it's okay to talk to him, it, you know, he loves you. So that started Michael's really opening up. One day I went upstairs and he was sitting on the floor and he's just chatting away. And I'm looking at him like, who are you talking to? And he says, oh, my guardian angel. I'm like, what?
Okay.
And then, so he kind of just opened himself up really a lot at that time. And we ended up moving from that house. And we moved into a house that had something on a negative level.
All right.
And that's when all heck broke loose.
All right.
When it came to Michael.
So this is, so starting off, and he's at the age of four, you said, when this first encounter happens with your grandfather, right?
Excuse me?
Michael was about 4 years old?
Yes.
Okay, so then how long did you live in that house before you made the move?
Maybe about 7 months.
All right, so he's just maybe 4.5, 5 years old by the time you get out of there.
Oh, yeah, we moved 12 times.
Wow, just trying to escape what was going on?
Yeah, well, because every home seems to have their own spirits in them.
Sure.
You know, their own little sets of spirits. Michael does pick up things just going to school or to walking down the street. But every house has its own set. And sometimes the spirits in that house were not nice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they scared the kids too much. Or there ended up being bad memories, so we would leave.
Now, the spirits that he sees, are they aware at first that he can see them? Or,
yes.
I mean, they know immediately when he walks in that this kid can see them there.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. They talk to him. They say his name or whatnot. And I noticed as Michael got older, a few of them, Michael would ignore them. And the more he would ignore them, the more they would get a little angry at him.
Hmm.
You know, like he would be up in his room one day and he was ignoring a man that was up there who kept trying to talk to him. And Michael wanted to work on his computer. And next thing you know, his blinds were being hit on his, you know, his head.
Oh, jeez.
So,
well, are they coming through looking for help like in the movie? Are they just trying to communicate just so they don't feel so alone? What exactly is the main point of these spirits trying to use Michael?
I think all of the above. It just depends. I mean, he's had many spirits that wanted his help. He's had many spirits that just want to play. You know, little kids would run around the house.
Sure.
You know, or hide around the corner, and when he'd come out, they'd pop out, and he didn't like that much. So it's kind of all of the above. We had one girl in a bathtub that she said that she was killed in, and she would just sit in that bathtub. We couldn't get rid of her.
Now, were you able to substantiate these? I mean, were you able to do some to check and see if there was actually a little girl drowned in that bathtub?
Well, you know, that one I would like to check into. I haven't. But what was very strange about that is this is when we moved to Florida. We stayed there for 4 months. And what was strange was we went to the jacuzzi area, pool area, and this older woman, me and my husband were sitting in the jacuzzi, and she came over to us and she says, "You're in that house." And we're just looking at her like, "What?" And she's like, "Everybody leaves that house. I can't believe you're in that house."
Mm,
I'm thinking, okay, she's, you know, something's wrong with this woman, you know. I'm trying to be nice to her, but
sure.
She's scaring me.
Right.
And a lot of things happened in that house. I mean, one night we're all sleeping, and we heard it was like a gunshot. Well, my husband, I never seen him fly off that bed so quick. And we ran to the children as they're looking at us asking, what was that? And my brother at the time was living with us, staying there. And he's running out of his room, what was that? And we had no clue. We searched the house, couldn't find anything. We're going back to bed. My husband went to the bathroom, and all of a sudden he looked, and the tub, I guess it was this plastic thing that's like embedded into there for like a towel holder or something.
Sure.
It was smashed right in half.
Wow.
And we recorded it. We went into the other bathroom, and he was hitting it really hard to show that you cannot break this. I mean, you have to have a lot of strength to break this thing, and somebody just broke it. They went to work, and something followed them to work, my brother and my husband, where it was like banging on the table, and they both put their hands up in the air and backed up around the, you know, from the table, and they're looking at each other, and they could see the table being hit, but there was nothing hitting it. So we ended up getting out of there.
Now, this is your husband, and these are his children?
These are my children. No, they're not his children.
Okay. So that's what I'm kind of curious about. That's kind of amazing to me that, got to give kudos to this guy that he's hanging around with a woman with children that are seeing dead things and having things following him to work.
Well, he did not believe in it. He didn't believe when I told him,
good thing they believed in him.
I don't believe in ghosts. Right. I don't believe in this. Until I think what really made him a believer was when we were downstairs watching TV one day, and all of a sudden we started hearing a thump, and it's thumping really hard, and Michael's screaming, and my other son is screaming, and we ran upstairs, and there's Michael on his bed, and it's going up and down. So my husband grabs Michael, and we all run downstairs, and we had closed his door. Well, me and all the kids stayed together to sleep as my husband went to bed, and in Michael's room, you could hear things being smashed around and being broke, and in the morning when he opened up the door, a lot of Michael's toys were just smashed all over the place. I think it was then that he really became a believer. He didn't like it much, but
sure.
Now he's just,
Yeah, honey, I gotta go get a pack of smokes from the 7-Eleven. I'll be right back.
Well, I was waiting for it.
Sure.
I really was. I was, because it was so chaotic in the house. Everybody was screaming all the time. Mm. I mean, we weren't sleeping. It was pretty bad.
Okay, so now things are escalating. You said you've moved into the second house. You've been having these strange experiences following you around. And this next house that you move into, there's more of a dark presence in this home. Is that correct?
Yes. When I looked back into that house, it was owned by a funeral director, and it was sold for $1 to all their family members until the landlord who owned that house that we rented it from.
Okay.
Has bought in it. But yeah, this guy, I don't know. His name was James. That's all I knew. But Michael would be physically hit at this house. Physically attacked
by the former owner, this funeral director.
Yeah, well, we don't know if it was him himself or it was something just on a negative level, I believe.
Okay, and at what point did you decide you needed help?
At that point.
Okay.
It was at that point that we knew something was wrong. I mean, I kept bringing my Michael to doctors, and they kept saying, "Look, it's not medical." The neurologist said he needed psychic help.
Psychic help or psychiatric help?
Psychic.
Okay.
Psychiatric help, we already went through all that.
All right, so your doctor was actually saying you might need to get the help of a psychic.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
In fact, he wrote down that Michael needed an exorcism after a while, yes.
Really? This is an actual medical doctor,
practitioner? Yes, I have a lot of medical doctors. In fact, when I had Michael, Michael has different things, like he goes into out of body and gets paralyzed, I would call 911 and let them try to wake him up because I couldn't. They would call in the priest and they would pray over Michael and then Michael would wake.
So it wasn't a form of a seizure like a grand mal or
a petite mal seizure. Michael goes out of body. That's one of his new things that happens. He goes out of body and when he comes back, he's paralyzed for a little while, sometimes a long time.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back from the break, we'll introduce John here into the story, and you can tell us what you did to get some help and what John was able to do to help you.
Okay.
And you're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Our guests this evening is Denise Jones and Mr. John Zaffis. They're talking to us about a very amazing case of paranormal activity, which continues today. And her son, Denise's son, is actually the inspiration for the character played by Haley Joel Osment in the movie The Sixth Sense. We'll be back more with their story right after this.
Are UFOs real? Does Bigfoot exist? Was Emily Rose really possessed? Who is the next American Idol?
She bangs! She bangs! Oh, baby, when she moves,
thank you.
Wasted by the way
thank
she...
you.
We try to answer these questions and more each week on The Darkness on the Edge of Town.
This is Dave Schrader from the Darkness on the Edge of Town radio show. Each week, we delve into the web of the unknown and deal with a lot of scary subjects. But nothing makes my blood run colder or scares me more than dealing with technology. That's why we turned to the experts when we wanted our website for the show set up and maintained. In the studio with me is Don Raleigh, owner of Evolve Systems. Don and his exceptional staff were easy to work with and made setting up our site a breeze. Don, what is it that sets you apart from other web developers?
Well, Dave, we make your business visions come to life by creating, maintaining, and hosting all of your internet needs. We do this by listening to our clients. We offer programs and price plans to fit any budget. And Dave, I mean any budget. Call us at 651-628-4000 and put us to work for you.
Call Don at Evolve Systems, 651-628-4000. I did, and I couldn't be happier with the results.
That's because we take the ugh out of technology, Dave. Call us today at 651-628-4000 or visit us on the web at www.evolve-systems.com, serving the entire United States. That's Evolve Systems, helping you to manage change. Cheers.
You hear footsteps and things bumping and banging in the middle of the night. Could it be paranormal activity? Or is it just Dave and Tim raiding your fridge?
Beer.
Strange things happen in the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Thank you very much for joining us here this evening. Our guests are Denise Jones, and she is the founder of the Life Foundation. You can go check out her website at paranormalhelp.com. Is that correct, Denise? paranormalhelp.com, and John Zaffis. John is the nephew of Ed and Lorraine Warren, the famous paranormal investigators. He is considered the godfather of paranormal now. He's done amazing things. He's got a great book out there, different stories. I mean, he's been involved in so many different cases, and he's talking to us tonight a little bit about the case that he was brought into with Denise, and then for the second hour, we're going to talk about some of the other cases that they've worked on together. Now, before we went to the break, Denise was just telling us about the second house that they'd moved into, where they were encountering a negative entity or a lower level, I don't know if it's a demonic entity at this point or not, but they encounter this entity and she begins looking for help outside of the medical realm. So Denise, go ahead and take us from there. What exactly did you do? Who were you calling for help?
Well, I couldn't find any help. And that is why I founded the Life Foundation. My mother happened to talk to some woman at work and she knew some paranormal investigator. So he ended up coming to the house and getting EVPs and stuff in the house and said he could help us. Well, they started coming in quite a bit. And then the next thing you knew, I opened up the door and there were TV people at my house.
Mm.
They happened to call the TV people to come. The guys didn't want to stop me from getting help. They just wanted the story to come out so they could be famous.
Okay.
So, of course, I didn't know what to do at that time. We ended up getting help elsewhere eventually. But we sought help with a bishop who performed an exorcism for Michael.
Now, at this point, you're assuming that he's possessed by something?
Well, I really don't know at this point. I know that Michael is being attacked. He's being physically scratched where it's drawing blood. He's being hit, and it's, nothing's helping. I mean, we're praying. We're doing everything. We tried the churches. They wouldn't help us.
Now, are you trying to exorcise the house or exorcise Michael himself?
We were trying to do both.
Okay. All
right. And we couldn't seem to find help.
All right, so you've gone through some exorcism here with a bishop, and that's not working for you?
Well, it worked for a few weeks.
Okay.
It stopped Mike from being hurt, you know, physically, and then we moved again.
Okay.
You know, to get out of that house.
Well, now you've just calmed it down, Denise. You should have stayed there a little bit longer, don't you think, now that you got everything settled?
No, because you got to understand, it only helped for 2 weeks, and then things started happening again.
Okay.
So we had to get out of that house.
All right. And these spirits wouldn't follow Michael?
He's had some that followed, yes.
Okay. All right. So you go to the next house. What occurs here?
The same things. I mean, he just sees things every day. I mean, he's being slapped. He's being hit. He's being tormented pretty good. We're up all night.
Why him and not you? Why not the older brother? Why not the husband?
I think Michael is more of a beacon to these things. His light is more bright. You know, as John explained one time, if you put Michael in the woods, he's like a torch. If we're all standing with him, we're like thick lighters.
Okay.
So the spirits will attract to the torch instead of the thick lighter, you know, and that's why they go after towards Michael.
All right. So if he's this gifted and he has these abilities, there's no way for him to shield himself against these type of entities?
Well, that was the problem I was having, trying to teach Michael. You know, I couldn't find anybody to even teach him how to guard himself or what to do, because we didn't know what gifts he had. We just
sure.
knew he could see dead people.
Okay. All right. Now, would he tell you that, were they just attacking him just for malevolent cases? Were they demonic? Were they just pissed off ghosts? What were they?
That's a question for John.
Okay. All right. So let's get to the point when you called John into this. Now, how many houses have we lived in at this point, and how many things have we had to escape, and how many exorcisms have we gone through before we call on John?
Only one exorcism, and I believe it was four houses.
Four houses later in an
yeah.
exorcism. Okay. So now how do you get tuned into John Zaffis?
Through the Life Foundation. I started the Life Foundation to get other people help because I couldn't find help when I needed it.
All right. And then he comes to you, or you find him?
I found him.
All right. And then what do you do now? John, take it from here. Now you get, was it a call, an email? How did you get reached by Denise the first time?
Basically, we're going back and forth emails.
Okay.
And she was explaining and filling me in on the event and the things that have occurred within the house and the family and her son. And as she was explaining the things and things were unfolding, you have to remember, Dave, there was a tremendous amount of confusion.
Sure.
It was a situation, you had people that were already in and out of there, so we already had a compounded type of circumstances where it was very difficult to try and sift through what was exactly happening. And at that point, Denise was just trying to piece together what exactly was happening with her son, Mike.
Now, John, at this point, you've done hundreds of investigations and worked in the demonology field and worked on exorcisms. Mm-hmm. When she's telling you these stories, in all honesty, how much are you thinking this lady's a nut? Or are you taking her serious right from the beginning that, holy crap, this sounds like it's pretty major?
No, to be honest with you, I take everything with a grain of salt. Doesn't
okay.
matter who the person is.
Sure.
And Denise will chuckle at this one. What finally 100% convinced me that there was something going on paranormal in the Jones home,
right.
her and I were sitting there talking. Michael was upstairs playing. And there's this little wood car that comes down the staircase. Then it keeps coming down, comes down. Okay, the kid pushed it, no biggie. But he didn't do it. It came across the floor, moved, stopped, came across the floor and moved. Denise is sitting there smiling. I'm looking at her, and she goes, "Now are you convinced?" At that point in time, I had to look at things from a totally different perspective. This isn't just a person telling me of events that took place.
Okay.
I felt at that point, this is time where we need to jump in, do an investigation, and try and sift through exactly what is happening with Michael.
Now, have you interviewed him at this point, or were you just still the first time sitting down kind of talking to Denise when this happened?
This was probably, Denise, correct me if I'm wrong, I think that was my second or third time that I was actually around Denise.
Yeah.
I think that was the
second time
being around Michael.
Now, you'd talk to Michael. Were you getting any red flags? Were you thinking maybe this is just a kid with a really healthy imagination or that he was maybe mentally disturbed?
No, I knew he wasn't mentally disturbed.
Okay.
That I will definitely say because, you know, when you're sitting around talking to people, you can usually pick up quite fast on that.
Sure.
You know, we're going back and forth and...
That's why I don't take Tim out in public with me much.
But, you know, we were going back and forth just having a general conversation. It wasn't really in depth with different things, and I would just throw out curves and just ask Mike if he was sensing anything or, you know, was there anything around at that point in time? Well, when you're a paranormal investigator, you can sense when there's something around. When something comes into a room, the whole atmosphere changes. Never said anything to Michael. And Michael piped up and he looked at me and he goes, John? And I went, yeah, Mike. He goes, there's something in the room right now. It just came in.
Now, how old is Michael at this point?
Denise, how old was Mike? 10?
Maybe, yeah, about 10, I think.
Yeah, he might have been about 10 years old.
Okay.
And he had in his room also a tent he hid in there for refuge. Now, these are the types of things you look for. And I said to him, I said, oh, that's pretty cool. That's what you got a little fort and everything. He goes, no. He says, I go in there so that it can't find me.
Wow, just like in the movie The Sixth Sense.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right.
Yeah. So, I mean, these are the characteristics and the things you look for. And like I said, my first time actually talking to Mike, it was brief, but it was long enough where I said to myself, good possibility we got that stuff going on in here.
Okay.
Then shortly after that was the whole car episode in her living room. And
sure.
Denise will tell you, because I can remember that. I can't remember a lot of things, but boy, I remember when things like that happened.
Well, you were being tapped on the head or something, too.
Yep. So, you know, here again, that's an indication with me that there's something around, because for some reason or another, it just likes to touch the top of my head. I don't know why, because of the bald spot or what. It just loves to touch it.
Maybe it was the ghost of Benny Hill.
Slapping you never know.
All right, yeah. So you've got this, you're getting this vibe, you're picking up on what's going on in there. You've just seen the car move across the floor. Now, John, you've dealt with a lot of stuff. Does this freak you out? Or are you just kind of like, oh, that's cool? Or are you kind of concerned now that, wow, what the hell's going on here?
I think at that point, to be honest with you, I was intrigued. I was interested. I did get up and move the car to see if the floor was slanted.
Sure.
Car didn't go anywhere. I mean, I will try to prove and look for something logical, and there was no logical explanation.
Well, then what we did was we would talk, and every time we would talk and ask questions to each other, the car would move again.
Yeah. So at that point, yeah, my concern went up. I said to myself, okay, we're dealing with something here. Now we have to start to sift through to find out what we're dealing with. And that's when it basically kicked in, and the investigation had started at that point in time. Now, we're dealing with a little boy that's been to hell and back with dealing with the paranormal. Total confusion on trying to figure out what could be human spirit, what could be something on a negative end that was going to hurt him. So there was a lot there to try and sift through.
John, let me take you back for 1 second here. As we talked a little bit earlier, you said you take a lot of what people say with a grain of salt. When you get calls like this that have something to do with the children, how often do you find that it's just the parent kind of looking for attention for their kid, or maybe the parent has issues themselves?
It could be like 50-50, Dave.
Okay.
It could definitely be a 50-50.
Now, let me ask you too, John, with all the investigating you've done, and from what I understand, you know, everybody seems to have a slightly different definition of different hauntings, but poltergeist activity seems to pop up in homes with children that, you know, have a lot going on with them and personally. And, you know, I don't know Denise's story, and we're not here to talk about her personal life beforehand, but, you know, apparently he's living with somebody that's not his father. I don't know if there was a messy divorce. I don't know what's going on. I don't know how upset this child might be. Could this be more of a poltergeist activity at this point, are you wondering, where he's maybe just kind of unleashing, and it's not so much a ghost, but maybe just more of Michael's, you know, whatever poltergeist activity seems to be, that kind of unleashing of kind of wild energy that does crazy things in the house around an upset or prepubescent child?
Absolutely. I know exactly what you're talking about. You do have circumstances where this is very much into play with the upbringing, the moving, and the different types of things. It is going to be viewed that way. And poltergeist activity does focus around children.
Right.
But a key factor is we know PK is scientifically proving out that a child does have this energy that can manipulate and move things and cause things to happen. But we also have to realize that there are other elements that do come into play with certain circumstances. Now, a regular poltergeist case, you don't have that outward manifestation of the child hearing the voices, seeing these grotesque, ugly type of things, having that real suppression, unless you have some other type of spirit that could have possibly intermingled. That's where it gets into trying to research to try to find out exactly what is causing the activity to occur. In Michael's situation, could very well have started off very innocently where spirit was communicating with him. But we know spirit attracts spirit, whether it's human spirit or something on a negative. And I think that's where Mike ended up having some of the major issues by the time I got involved with the whole case, that we were actually dealing not with only human spirit, but with other things that had intermingled in there.
All right. When you're saying other things, you're talking about demonic?
I'm definitely referring to the demonic forces that work, yes.
Okay. So now you're coming into this poor little 10-year-old boy's life, and not only has he got a couple of creepy spirits in the house that are causing havoc, he's also got some demonic low-level entities that are mucking about in there.
Absolutely.
What's your step? What do you do from there? Now you've seen this car move. Every time you talk, it starts moving again. So it's letting you know, yeah, this is real. We're here. What do you do? What do you do in that situation?
You have a process that you go through, and unfortunately, none of us have a magical wand.
Right.
I wish we did.
Sure.
But it's a process of elimination, of understanding some of the things, trying to sift through them, Dave. At that point, I already had in my mind that I was going to have to take this a step farther than what you normally do in these types of cases. I felt at that point in time that Mike was going to actually need another exorcism performed over him, because
okay.
I felt what he had attached to him was very significant and definitely something on the demonic level. And it just intensified and things got very, very strong. And Denise will tell you, her and I very many times would go back and forth on things, and I would say to her, you know, Denise, it takes time. And she would always reach out and say, John, he needs help. He needs the help now.
Well, you know why? It was because I couldn't get Michael to school.
Mm-hmm.
Because every morning I couldn't wake the kid up.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
I remember, I recorded it.
Yeah.
Where every time I put holy water or a cross on Michael, something would choke him.
What really reached out in the climax, if you will, is I was at work, and Denise called me frantically because she couldn't get Michael to respond. She couldn't wake him up. She drove him down to where I worked so that I could see what he was going through.
Yeah.
Hmm.
What's that tell you, Dave?
That's unreal.
You know,
yeah.
you look at this, and you sit back, and I walked out of the building where I was working and went over to the car, and I looked at him, and I just said to myself, oh, God, we got to move, and we got to start moving even faster.
Well,
I mean, for a mom to get her child, literally carry him, pour him into the car, and bring him to where I was, that told me right then and there.
Well, for those of you just tuning in, you're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Our guests this evening is John Zaffis and Denise Jones, and they're talking to us about a very real case. Actually, the movie The Sixth Sense was based on a lot of what has occurred with this young boy. It's Denise's son, Michael. We'll be back to talk more with John and Denise right after this.
Once you have seen Dave and Tim in the light, you'll understand why we must return to the darkness on the edge of town. Stay tuned. There is more to come.
Hey, everybody, it's Tim from Darkness Radio. And, you know, one of the things we like to do on the TAPS Darkness Radio events, like the ones we did back this weekend at Rolling Hills and what we're doing this weekend at the Stanley Hotel, is to give back to our community. It's an important mission for TAPS, and it's also an important mission for Darkness Radio to kind of give back whenever we can. And on the line with me right now, I have Bruce Tango, the father of Dave Tango of TAPS. And, Bruce, this past weekend at Rolling Hills, we came across a very special event that you're doing and you're taking place in, as well as the Ghost Hunters, and it's taking place in New Jersey. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Yes, Tim, thanks. On November 25th, starting at 1 o'clock going to 6, we're going to have a dinner and show. Grant, Jason, Dave, and Steve will be there, the Ghost Hunters. And also we're going to have the amazing Kreskin. He's been around a while, and we also have a group called the Party Dolls. They've been around for quite a long time. Now, everybody knows Chris, and he's been on Johnny Carson's about 80-something times. He's he's really well known, and the name Amazing fits him because he does some amazing things. The Party Dolls, they've the three girls that do 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s music, and they've appeared with people like Beach Boys, Little Richard, Chuck Berry, Connie Francis, Herman's Hermits, Neil Sedaka, and so forth. And everybody knows who the Ghost Hunters are.
Absolutely.
And we're all going to get together, and we're going to try to raise some money for the Tourette Syndrome Association of New Jersey. Now, a lot of people don't realize, and David is just starting to let people know. And in fact, my son Dave does have Tourette Syndrome, and he was diagnosed as a toddler, and he still has it. You know, he hides it pretty well, but you know, it's a battle for people who have this, and we want to do something. I know Rutgers University is doing research, and they feel that the research into Tourette's is also going to find answers to the autism problem. So actually, we're killing two birds with one stone. So it's going to be a great time. We're going to have about 4 or 5 hours of entertainment, and we'll have a buffet dinner and drink, and we're hoping that a lot of people will come out and support this important cause.
And if people want to get tickets to this event, Bruce, how do they do that?
Well, there's a couple ways. They could call me. My number is 908-256-4890, and I'll direct them to, I'll give them an address where they can mail in a check, or they also could go online. And that'll be www.idealeventmanage.com. That's IDEALEVENTMANANG.com. It's all one word. And you click on there, and you'll be able to get the tickets online.
Okay. And there may be people who are listening right now who are maybe in different areas of the country, the Midwest, out in the West, who want to contribute to this great cause but might not be able to come to the event. How can they send a donation to help out the Tourette Syndrome Association of New Jersey?
Well, they can make a check out to the Tourette Syndrome Benefit Committee. And you mail it to the Tourette Syndrome Benefit Committee, and the address is 752 East Broad Street, Westfield, New Jersey, 07090. And we appreciate anything that they could afford.
All right. Well, Bruce, we want to thank you for being with us this evening, and good luck with the event.
Danny, thank you so much, and you guys are doing great work. I appreciate everything.
Try not to fall asleep. Will only give you nightmares. Welcome back to the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Tonight we have a special show for you. For any of you out there that are fans of horror movies and the paranormal and supernatural, I'm sure you all remember the movie that took place a couple years back starring Bruce Willis and a young Haley Joel Osment called The Sixth Sense. This character of Cole Sear was actually based on a real boy, and his name is Michael. He's the son of Denise Jones, who is our guest this evening. She's the founder of the Life Foundation. You can find out more information about Denise and her foundation by going to her website, which is paranormalhelp.com. And she reached out to John Zaffis, the paranormal investigator, demonologist, and John was coming in to try to help out with this case as well. It's amazing what we've been listening to. We're going to be here with them for the rest of this hour, and then they'll be back with us after the top of the hour to talk to us about more of the case and other cases that they've worked on together. And if you do have information or questions for John Zaffis regarding paranormal activity that's going on in your home or in your life, you can reach John. And John, correct me if I'm wrong here, it's prsne.com.
Best way to get a hold of me is www.johnzaffis.com.
Oh, okay. Very easy, too. All right. So you can go to johnzaffis.com and contact John there. You can also see all the great information he has up there about his books, lectures, seminars, anything that he's going to be out there doing, shows and programs that he's involved with. And if you haven't had a chance to see John talk live, you definitely want to get out there. He's got some interesting information, great pictures, some creepy EVPs. It's a great opportunity to go out and learn about the paranormal from somebody that's one of the few people I would consider an expert in the field. We're going to get back into their story right now. Now, John was just telling us before the break about the fact that he realized that there was a real need for help for Michael at the point that Denise had to actually bring the young boy down to John's work. And now, was the boy still, was Michael still unconscious at this point, Denise, or was he waking up, or what exactly was going on?
I think that he was pretty much woken up, but he couldn't open his eyes.
Okay. All right, so John, she brings him out, and you're at work. Hey, boss, I'll be right back. I have to go deal with a demonic problem. That's a pretty easygoing boss there. So you go on outside, and this child's in this condition, and you realize now that there's definitely a lot more of a sense of urgency to help this child, and you're going to do this, and you want to start getting involved in another exorcism. Who do you go to for this kind of help then, John?
Well, there's a lot of clergy that I do deal with and I intermingle with, trying to get people help. And at that point in time, we were definitely involved, and Larry Elward was brought aboard to do the exorcism over Michael at that point in time.
Now, at this point, do you have a big enough reputation out there that when you say, hey, this kid needs help, that they just jump in to help, or do they want to do an investigation of their own to make sure that this kid's just not nuts or the mom's not a whack job? And they string out the process a little longer.
Well, no. Normally, when they hear John Zaffis, they don't even like answering the phone. Okay. They know it's the real deal.
John Zaffis and bill collectors means trouble, huh?
Yeah. Okay. No, I mean, you know, I guess I'm just fortunate, you know, from being around it for so many years that
sure.
When I do contact the clergy that I know, it's usually like, guys, they need help. We need to jump in. And it's usually very cut and dry where, okay, fine, what do we need to do? Let's get it set up. So I've, you know, at that point, you know, we did what we could, and we intermingled and basically got it performed as soon as possible. But what you have to remember is that when you're in a situation like this, you have so many multiple of different perspectives and different things that are going on, Dave, that Michael is a very sensitive kid. He's very open to stuff that's going on around him as far as the paranormal.
Sure.
So that is one of the most difficult type situations to deal with. It doesn't shut off for him.
Okay.
And with that, and combining all the different things, that is a very tough situation, and it's very hard. How do you stop any individual where they have these things that do come to them, and how do you stop the negative from coming back? You can't.
Okay.
There's no way to stop that negative from actually reapproaching. And Denise will share this with you, and I always would explain to her, right now Michael is too young to understand some of this.
Yeah.
He's a frightened child. And Denise would always say, but John, he needs to learn. He needs to learn. And I kept saying, you have to give him time.
Yeah.
And as time went on, Michael did start to learn. Michael would start to pick up on different things, on understanding, on learning the difference between whether there's, you know, good energy or negative energy.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this. Now, John, you've got a religious background. You're working with a bunch of religious icons, you know, bishops, Catholic priests, I mean, major people in religion. Denise, now, at this point, do you have a religious background or a belief system?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I was raised Catholic.
All right. Now here's my question for you, John. You said there's no way to keep the negative away. I guess the question, as a parent and as a Christian myself, I'm curious about that statement. Just why would, you know, our God or whatever we believe in allow this to occur to a child, and there's no way to call down light or Michael the Archangel or whatever belief you have to protect this child? There's no way to do that and keep him safe?
Somebody else?
Sure.
Well,
You know, Michael, as he got older, he's actually seen Archangel Michael. Michael had to go through this fear to learn. And this is something that I couldn't understand, you know, early on. Michael, just to go to the bathroom, we would have to go near the door and stand there so he could go. He couldn't go out to my sunroom to get a soda because he was afraid. Because every time he'd go out there, there'd be some spirit out there talking to him or trying to talk to him.
But the spirits wouldn't make themselves, they wouldn't show up in a room you were with?
Oh, yeah, but they seemed to, when he was alone, they wanted to talk to him.
Okay.
It was just an easy, you know, thing to do for them.
Sure.
One day, Michael went out of body, and on his own, because whenever he would lay on his back, he'd pop out. He said this entity came into his room and grabbed him by the throat. I know this is going to sound very strange to everybody. Grabbed him by the throat, pulled him out the window. He went into the ground. He said he found himself on a ledge with this spirit that he felt like he's known forever. He wasn't afraid. And he was seeing things being torn, people being torn apart. This spirit said to him, "Are you afraid?" And he said, "No." He says, "Well, then why are you afraid up there?" With that, Michael was thrown back into his body. He opened up his eyes and come running down to me screaming of what had just happened to him.
Sure.
But do you know, from that moment on, my son was never afraid. He would go out and get a soda. Me and my husband would look at each other like, "What's Michael doing? He's going out to the sunroom by himself." And we were like a little taken back by it. But it was from that day on, Michael was no longer afraid of anything. He was not afraid of when he would see a demonic stand in his doorway, or he'd go above him. You know, when he was sleeping, he'd wake up and be above him or something. He would just pretty much not care.
So you were kind of picking up on the fact that apparently Michael's here for a reason, other than being a kid and your son. He's here for something, and he's going through the trials to get him strong enough to deal with whatever his future holds for him.
Right.
So that's what you were trying to prepare him for.
Yes, and he was told by one of these spirits in one of his little out-of-body thingies that he has a key, and they want this key. And these bad things do not want the key out. Michael has no idea what they're talking about or what this key is, but this is what he was told. So Michael says, "Well, someday I'll know." And okay, he leaves it at that.
Now, John, how about your take on this? I mean, what at this point, there's no way to, you say there's no way to really protect the kid from the negative. Why do you feel that, you know, if there's a all-powerful God or spirit or Oz or whatever you believe in, why isn't he protecting a little boy like this from these horrors?
Well, what you have to remember is we are dealing with a little boy.
Right.
You have a tremendous amount of confusion. You have a child that is totally fearful of everything in his surroundings, and that's understandable. When you're working with an individual and you're trying to get them to understand something, you have that factor. The fear factor is one of the strongest things that we all have. As far as I'm concerned, yes, he is a very powerful God. He's a very strong God, and he can help to protect us. But we have to learn to be able to help to fight to protect ourselves.
Right.
Now, as a child, that's one of the most difficult things to try and teach a child, to understand that and realize that they have to move past that fear factor. So when I say you're in a situation where everything and anything that's going to transpire with that, is the most you can do is reach out and help. But you have to learn to get that person, especially a child, to stand on their own two feet, to be able to free themselves of some of the things that are going on, to build that up. It's so hard within a child because they don't know which way to turn.
Well, I guess that's my point. I mean, you know, and again, understand I come from a religious background and bringing up myself, and I have a faith and belief. But it comes off to me like God's kind of a jerk that he'd let this happen to a child.
Well, you know, I
understand the whole death is, you know, we all have that question of, oh, God, why would you take a child or why would you do this? But, you know, that's one situation. But to put a child up who's already dealing with confusion and dealing with the things that are going on in his life and then have to face up against demons and, you know, at your age, John, you know, you've learned, you're prepared, you have faith and belief, but at your age, it shouldn't have to happen to you. I just can't understand the whole philosophy, and we're not here to beat the Bible or you know, talk religion, I understand, but I that's where my confusion is just, wow, I'm just blown away by the fact that there isn't more of a way to protect especially our children as a parent, you know, I'm having issues at home with my child having things, and I've talked to John about it. You know, it kind of frightens me to know that there's really no way you can protect your kids from these kind of
Well, things. There is, but I want Denise to answer this one.
Okay, all right.
Because I know what she's going to say. Go ahead.
All right, go ahead.
I don't know what to say to that, to be honest with you.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
I thought you were going to, you know, because as many times as you and I have had those conversations, and you would say to me, why does God let this happen to my son? Why does he let it happen to my son? Remember?
Yeah.
Okay, you know, getting into the nitty-gritty of some of these things, and I would always say to you, Denise, sometimes these things occur, sometimes these things happen, and there's reasons why they occur. Now, does it happen to all children that go through paranormal things? No. There are kids that I've dealt with that have never gone through to the magnitude of what Michael has gone through. But what you have to realize is until an individual, whether it be Michael or anybody that's out there, God grants us free will.
Right.
And we are in control of our mortal bodies. We make decisions. And when you have a frightened child, and that child does not know at that point in time which way to turn to be able to stop those things from occurring, that takes time, and it takes working with that child or any individual for them to learn to stand on their own two feet. God provides us with those tools. We're the ones that have to implement those tools to be able to help the child.
So again, basically what you believe that it honestly comes down to is that it was preparation for possibly a bigger, more important job that Michael might have someday in the future.
It could be, yeah.
Okay, all right.
Could be.
And he's ready for it now. I mean, he's not afraid anymore. He's, like I said, seen Archangel Michael, and he felt he was there to protect him. I was actually in the jacuzzi with my son, and we were talking, and my brother came out. Now, at this time, my brother, we were trying to help him. He was really on a lot of drugs, and we were trying to get him help. He had a traumatic brain injury, and he came out, and for some reason, Archangel Michael showed up, and Michael's just staring off to the right, and he's looking white, and I'm trying to talk to my brother, and then my brother left, and then Michael's like, Mom, look, Archangel Michael's there, and I'm like, how do you know it's Archangel Michael? He says, Mom, how do you know how to breathe? He's like, I just know it's him. I says, well, what's he doing? He says, the minute Uncle Eddie came out, he had the I don't know what you would call it, a staff or sword that he kept up by his chest. He says he pointed it towards him, and he held it there towards Uncle Eddie. He says when Uncle Eddie left, he put it back up. And I asked Michael, is he still there? And he says, yeah. And I said, what's he doing? He says, he's just looking at us. He told me that he was barefoot. He had a white cloth. It was a little dirty, but it was a white cloth. And it was just wrapped up around him. He had shoulder-length, dirty blonde hair, and he says the hugest nose he's ever seen in his life.
Are you sure he wasn't seeing Owen Wilson?
He's got the pointed nose.
Oh, right? Yeah, okay. Okay.
But, and he stood there for a while, and I thanked him for being there, and then he had left. Michael's just, he says he knows that they're there to help him now. He knows that all he had to do was ask. He didn't ask before. I mean, when he was being attacked, he would say, in the name of Jesus Christ, I command you to leave, because that's what he was taught. But
right.
He didn't know that he had to work on it through himself, his own heart.
Okay.
And that's what he started doing. Now, the minute he started doing that, Michael all of a sudden had a new gift, where he would have vision, where he would be in his room, and half the room would look like a hologram. And one time he saw an officer giving a ticket.
Okay.
Two guys was on the right, two guys were on the left. They went up to this officer and grabbed his stick and beat the crap out of him. Michael was frightened. He said he could feel the fear and the pain of this officer. He said he was screaming, but of course nobody could hear him. You know, then he came back. Another vision he had was of a girl being kidnapped. He said he couldn't feel her fear or her pain, and that bothered him because he felt he wasn't connected to her. And I had let him know that maybe the girl shut herself down, and that's why he couldn't feel it. Now, Michael doesn't know if these are, if this is the past, the present, or the future. He says when he's in these states, he can't think normally like he can now.
Wow.
But he doesn't know how to help these people. You know, I spoke to John Holland, and he said that he will learn this eventually.
All right. Well, you're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Hour one is up with our guests Denise Jones and with Mr. John Zaffis. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more of their story and more of Michael's story. Please stay with us here on the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with Tim Dennis. We'll be back with more right after this.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.